Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game on this Wednesday. Also, Chasing Checkers coming up tonight at 6 o'clock. We'll talk last weekend's race at Echo Park Speedway, a.k.a. Atlanta, and also the street course race coming up this weekend on the streets of Chicago. We say hello now to the fine reporter from the Motor Racing Network. Steve Post is on the line with us. Steve, what's up?
Gentlemen, always great to chat, talk a little NASCAR racing. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely. I want to go back to last weekend, and I mean, I was glued to the television. I wish I was there watching that race. It's a mile and a half with a super speedway feel. There was a ton of passes, a lot of great racing, a big one, and Chase Elliott ends up getting the win. So sound the siren down at the Dawsonville pool room. That was, I think, the race of the year. What did you think?
It was awesome. It really, truly was. I understand the big ones and crashing are part of NASCAR racing, and I hate to see that, but it is part of it. But what it set up is just an absolutely amazing, compelling battle at the end. And I think part of the reason it was compelling is it was the cast of characters that were left racing. You know, you had Tyler Reddick, who's been a bit of a struggle. He's up there mixing it up. You have Alex Bowman perpetually on the hot seat, although nothing seems to happen, and everyone says he's got a contract through the end of next year. Alex seems to just always be in that conversation. Brad Keselowski has become beloved because of the misfortune that he's had this year. How good he's been so many times, and here he is mixing it up, and then NASCAR's favorite son, the most popular driver, Chase Elliott, and just battling, mixing it up, passing each other, drafting by each other, just phenomenal racing down the stretch. And when we get done, our long national nightmare, 44 events, Chase Elliott picks up the win and formally locks himself into the playoffs, although Chase has had a really, really good season, but it is good to see them get one in the win column.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about him and then the other Chase, who won the week before, Chase Briscoe. I feel like those two have been quietly just kind of doing their thing, and now, you know, it obviously took Briscoe some time to get acclimated to Joe Gibbs Racing. I spoke with him when he was here in Nashville, and he said it was just different. Like, it was a different culture and something that he had to really adapt to. Those two, though, I am paying attention to as we get into the summer months and the playoffs.
I think those are good two to pay attention to. Let's talk a little Chase Briscoe. Where Chase Briscoe came from, Stewart Haas Racing, okay? At one time, Stewart Haas Racing was a team that you could put on par with Joe Gibbs Racing. That was not the case last year. I mean, I love Tony Stewart, Gene Haas. What they did was phenomenal. The bottom line of it is, though, is when you've got crew members sending resumes to other teams all year long because they're all worried about their job, knowing the team is going to shut down, and I think they did a great job by telling people the team is going to shut down. I think everything was done right by Stewart Haas with the situation they had, but that put performance and teams and dynamics and all of the employees in a really, really awkward spot. And so Chase Briscoe went out. He won Darlington in the fall of last year, and so he's performed really, really well. I can't imagine how dynamic a change it is, let alone the culture. The Stewart Haas culture was all about racing. Joe Gibbs' culture is very, very different. It's about championships and sports and everything else. So the culture and then just the laser focus everyone has on the future and not their individual futures, Chase Briscoe's sitting in a really good spot, and he's really getting his footing there. On to Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott has scored the second most points of anybody this season. Only William Byron has scored more points than Chase Elliott. What's wrong with Chase? Oh, my gosh, they're struggling. No, they're performing very, very well. This is not a team like their teammate Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson's going to have more wins and more DNFs than Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott is going to be more consistent. He's got, I believe, 10 top 10 finishes. But when you dig a little deeper in that thing, he has got a number, I think another five or six, that are 10th through 15th. And so Chase Elliott just keeps knocking them out. Well, I know winning is important, but consistency also is important. And Chase Elliott and this team have been really, really good. So I'm with you during this summer stretch. I think Chase Elliott, Chase Briscoe are a couple guys to really keep an eye on, because I think that, and I think now that they both have wins, they're in a spot where it frees them up where they can maybe be a little bit more aggressive with some strategy and some calls to maybe knock out another win before we go playoff racing.
We're talking to Steve Post from the Motor Racing Network. They will be racing in Chicago on the streets this weekend. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. But the news coming out yesterday, Steve, Daniel Suarez and Trackhouse Racing announcing they have mutually agreed to part ways at the end of the season. We know that his contract was up at the end of the year. What do you think that means for Trackhouse moving forward? Because I know they got Connor Zilich kind of waiting in the wings, but is he truly ready for the Cup Series at this point? Because I think that's going to be a ride that a lot of people are going to pay attention to.
Yeah, that is right now the top seat available in the sport. Okay, so that is the top seat available. Ironically, the top driver available now in the whole silly season pecking order now becomes Daniel Suarez. What is interesting about this one to me is that 1 year ago, Daniel signed a one-year contract extension with Trackhouse. My understanding is that Trackhouse wanted a little bit longer, but Daniel, there's some hesitancy that Daniel has had about what's going on at Trackhouse. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's what's going on at Trackhouse. I don't know if it's something outside of it where Daniel is focusing on something else in his life. I don't know if he's got something else in the wings that he wants to do in NASCAR racing. But Daniel signed only a one-year extension last year, and he's expressed concern. This is a weird one to me, because usually when we have teams parting ways mutually, it's the team that has the most concern about this. I sense this is kind of a 50-50 thing. I sense that Daniel has had some concerns, which leads to concerns on the team. And I think the good news is for all of them is we're no longer poking and prodding around asking the questions. So there's the Daniel Suarez portion of it. We'll see where he lands. And I do think Connor Zilich is in the pipeline. Now, the question is he ready? And I don't know if anyone is ever ready. Connor Zilich is a student of this sport. My gosh, the work that he does, the work ethic he has, the time in the simulator, the studying this sport, the nuance of this sport, he is absolutely amazing. You can do all of that stuff. What happens when they start throwing real punches, though? And what happens, you can go and you can run the Daytona 500, but what happens in the third race when you've been bloodied and battered and you got to suit it up and go for another 500 miles? I think that's getting interesting, but I'm not sure anyone is ready for it. But I hear that, you know, my understanding is Zilich is kind of in the wings. We've heard all along that the Trackhouse has four drivers with Zilich in the present three for three seats, so I think it makes a lot of sense, but time will tell where this thing happens. The one thing I've learned about silly season is you just never know when a left or right hand turn by somebody is going to happen, and it upsets the whole apple cart. It's sort of like the playoffs. You never know. You kind of have a sense for it, but one little move can just upset everything. And I believe all the big moves are done, but you just never know what's going to happen here in this sport.
Steve, the NASCAR heads to Chicago this weekend for the downtown race. I'm not a fan of it, and I wanted to ask you, when you talk to NASCAR purists who've loved this sport for 30, 40 years, what do they think about this race in downtown Chicago? Because again, I want to see these guys on a track going fast. I'm just not a fan of it.
NASCAR purists don't like this move to Chicago. I understand that, okay? NASCAR new fans and the folks up in the Windy City love this race in Chicago. And to me, it boils down to a balancing act. And I love where we're at with NASCAR. I kind of love it all, okay? Here's what we've added in NASCAR over the last couple of years. We've added the L.A. Coliseum. We've added the street race in Chicago. We've added Mexico. Oh, the purists are just losing their minds on that. Okay? Now, hold on. We've added Bowman Gray Stadium. We've added North Wilkesboro. And this year we ran Xfinity and trucks in Rockingham. So to me, I think this is a fine line, a balancing act that we have to do. And yes, there are going to be times when you're going to hold your nose and say, man, I don't like that they're going to Chicago. Well, stay tuned. We'll be back in North Wilkesboro, or something's going to happen at Rockingham, or maybe we're going back to Bowman Gray Stadium. You know, we'll always have Martinsville and Darlington coming up. And it's a matter of trying to appeal to a wide range of folks. So yeah, we have the new shiny things like Chicago and Mexico and the Coliseum, but simultaneously, hey, we went back to Nashville. Now we haven't gone to real Nashville yet. We've gone to Nashville Super Speedway. They bring back the fairgrounds. We ever get the key unlocked to the fairgrounds. I think I think that it's a balancing act, and I can't imagine how tough it is. But I really think they're striking a pretty good balance with a lot of this now. When you lay one over top of the other.
All right. So Steve, the Athletic reported June 18th that NASCAR is nearing an agreement to put a street race in San Diego next year. Let me ask you this. Because F1 is so popular globally, is this a small way to tap into that? I know it's NASCAR, not F1, different cars, but is this a small way to tap into that world?
I think a little bit. NASCAR has said if the fans, we're going to take this thing to new people and new faces and new places. That was the whole premise of the LA Coliseum. And that first race out there was bonkers. Okay, first race in Chicago. If we wouldn't have had flooding up there in the streets, we'd still be sitting in traffic with it. But I think that's the case. But here's where I think we're at with this thing. I think two or three and done is a really good approach to some of these events. Now, I don't want two or three done at Martinsville. I want my two races at Martinsville, and if you threw a third one in there, I would love it. The same with Darlington, okay? Because that's the traditionalist in me. But I think taking this thing to new faces and new places kind of energizes the sport in a different direction. I'll lay one on you here that's smaller and subtle. I was on the MRN broadcast of the truck race at Lime Rock Park this past weekend. The place was bonkers. They shattered records as far as attendance. You walked onto the property at 9 o'clock and there was a buzz in the air. There was people excited about the Truck Series race. The race could have been a little bit better. Yeah, I'll acknowledge that. But I think you've got to taper that old school tradition with a new buzz. And I think San Diego is certainly in the hot conversation with that. And let's get back out to Southern California, where, by the way, there is a rich and storied tradition. Go back to Riverside, even Fontana or Ontario Speedway. And it's one of those big check marks you want to have as far as markets go for all the marketing people. Let's do that. Let's see what happens. And I think the San Diego thing is pretty far down the road that we might be seeing that as we go forward.
Steve, Chase and I, my co-host, we have a very good friend who works for the newspaper here in Nashville called The Tennessean. He tells me that their page views on NASCAR are off the chart. I mean, it's like unbelievable. The fans are still there. You know, we can gripe and moan and complain and all that, but they're still there, and it shows how this sport is never going away, and it keeps growing. When you get page views on the internet that are just amazing, it just shows you how popular the sport will. So we complain, Steve, because we care.
Yeah, oh, no doubt about it. We're sports fans. You know, what is sports talk radio and what is news talk radio? We complain because we care. We're screaming and hollering at each other. So that is the beautiful thing about it. And here's the thing. We are so trained to look at what one of the matrix we always look at is the television ratings. Oh, we live by the television ratings. We die by the television ratings. Well, where does page views factor into this? Where does the guy following along on Instagram follow in with this? Where does the one just watching YouTube clips of it? Where's the one listening to MRN radio? You know, the bottom line of it is that there's so many more ways to consume this sport. And yes, there are a lot of people consuming this sport. I will say this, the numbers from the prime period of the NASCAR coverage, the last five races we had before the race in Atlanta, the young male demographic, which is what you guys are looking for rating-wise and what we're all looking for rating-wise, it showed a significant double-digit growth with that racing on Prime. Now, us old-school fans are like, I don't even know how to get it on my TV. Okay, but I think that's the beauty. You know, I mean, yeah, a buddy of mine went over and hooked his dad up, and his dad's like, I'll never be able to see these races. And his dad pushed this button and pushed that button, and the race showed up on his TV. You know, I mean, so this is this cultural war, cultural battle as much as it is a NASCAR battle. We're just reflecting what's going on in society, but the numbers are good, and the young numbers are good. And Lord knows, we have struggled with young fans, and we're finally starting to make a little progress in it through the prime coverage, and I do think taking this thing to some new places also brings new people into it as well.
It's funny, Steve. People during the prime broadcast were like, you know, how do I watch it? And I go, yeah, you know, I don't know, but you can listen to MRN on 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're here all the time. Absolutely. You know, it was so funny. The prime coverage just cracked me up because going into it, the doom and gloom. Oh my gosh, this is going to be the worst thing ever. I'm not going to be able to see it. My granddad's not going to be able to see it. We're not going to be able to talk racing. When that first show ended, when that first post-race show ended, Prime should do all 38 races. Prime should do this. Prime should do that. We should have this on Prime. We should have it here. We are just human beings, and the bottom line of it is, but I'm with you. MRN is there and rock solid all the time. Just throw away the television, tune in the radio, and we'll all be happy.
Real quick, do you think that – you mentioned Rockingham earlier. Do you think that that's a reality, that the Cup Series will be back there? Maybe not next year, but within the next 2 to 3?
No, I don't think it's a reality. I think – I just – I – there's something fishy going on at Rockingham, guys. The track's for sale.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, there's all kinds of speculation as to what's going on, but the track's for sale. Now, I think it gets sold. I think Rockingham found a really, really good spot, okay? We don't want to run the Cup cars on Easter. We just historically don't want to run the Cup cars on Easter. For years and years and years, what Easter was the old Busch Series race at Hickory on Saturday afternoon. That's what we had for years, and that was an iconic race because it was the one race where everyone kind of focused in. TNN had the coverage. Eli Gold's up there making the call, and you would just focus in on the Busch Series race at Hickory, okay? Yeah, we're not racing at Hickory again. To me, I think Rockingham found the perfect niche for the Truck Series and Xfinity doubleheader, put them in the headliner, put them on that Easter weekend. So I think that what they did was really, really good. I don't see a Cup race going there, and it's just one. There's so many Cup races in the Southeast. You know, there's just so many. Where would we take it from? Where would it come from? And then a month after the race is over, and we're all raving about how good it is, the guy says he wants to sell the racetrack. So I don't know what's going on down there, but I don't know that I see Cup racing there anytime soon.
Fair enough, Steve. Thanks so much for the time today. Always enjoy your coverage and the conversation. We'll be listening on Sunday from your coverage from Chicago.
Guys, looking forward to it. I do love going to Chicago. It's going to be a fun time, but it is going to be a blast up there in the Windy City and see how our brackets do. We'll see how the playoff bracket does. We'll see if we get dry weather, all kinds of stuff on the line here at Chicago this weekend. It's going to be fun. Appreciate the time, guys.
Absolutely. Steve Post joining us from the Motor Racing Network, and you can hear MRN's coverage of the Grant Park 125 from Chicago starting at noon on Sunday. We'll have more coming with John McClain, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.